Hello and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. My guest for today is Joanna Nathan, CEO and founder of Prana Thoracic, a Houston-based medical device company that hopes to enhance early-stage lung cancer diagnostics. Last week, Prana announced its launch with a $3 million grant from the Cancer Prevention and Research Institute of Texas. And Joanna joins the show today to discuss how the company will use that funding to get to first-in-human trials and grow its team. Joanna also shares her passion for Houston's growing innovation ecosystem and what motivates her as a healthcare innovator. Joanna, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm super excited to have a conversation here.
Yeah, I was telling you a little bit earlier that, you know, it's kind of ridiculous I haven't had you on the podcast sooner. So deeply apologize for not getting you on here sooner. I know a lot of Houston's innovation ecosystem is very familiar with you and the various hats you've worn in the ecosystem. So for those who aren't familiar, tell me a little bit about your career. What got you interested in entrepreneurship? Did you always think that this would be your career path?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think, kind of key to how my career has gone is that I'm an immigrant. So I actually moved here when I was 16 from Abu Dhabi. So I was born and raised in the Emirates. And I didn't know that I wanted to do entrepreneurship, as a high school student, but I did know that I was really interested in medical innovation, initially kind of on the research side. You know, nanotechnology at the time was really becoming kind of a thing. And so I was really excited about that. And that helped me basically choose Rice when I was deciding where to go for college. So I moved out here, went to Rice, did bioengineering there, and was kind of on the path of like research and academia, because for the most part, in my program, at least, most people ended up in med school or getting a PhD. And that was kind of the general path for bioengineers at the time. But I decided, or kind of what helped me decide is my senior year, we had this capstone engineering design project. A lot of engineering programs have it. And it was sponsored by Mehdi Rezavi at Texas Heart Institute. And it was my first real exposure to the medical device world, to something that you could, in theory, you know, build, test, and have in patients within like a few years of coming up with that idea, which is quite far flung from, you know, some of the more kind of benchtop kind of research things I was doing at the time. And so I think either because I'm impatient or just because I really appreciated the ability to make that impact so quickly, I fell in love with medical devices. And that was really the beginning of kind of my entrepreneurship journey. So from there, I asked Mehdi if I could go work for him. I ended up running basically his lab at Texas Heart Institute. And then we spun out Serranis, which is a local medical device startup that's now commercial, spun that out of Texas Heart Institute and got to work there. And that's where I really realized at the time, you know, I had my bioengineering degree, I was running product development. And that's where I really realized how much I loved a specific aspect of entrepreneurship, which is telling the story of complex technologies. So specifically, you know, medical devices, biology, medicine, lots of different kind of complexities there, but telling those stories to all of the different audiences and all the different stakeholders it takes to, you know, bring something like that to the bedside. And that's where I fell in love with like that specific aspect of medical innovation and entrepreneurship. And so at that point, I decided I would go back to business school to essentially kind of hone some of those skills and really learn, you know, a little more about kind of strategy and finance and some of the other pieces that go into kind of leading early stage startups. And while I was there, I realized one of the things that could really help me round out my career was kind of getting or really help me round out my, perspective, I guess, on innovation and entrepreneurship was getting more of that innovation or investor mindset. Sorry. So that kind of led me down the path of my last couple of roles, So first with Mercury Fund as a venture fellow, and then managing a portfolio of startups at the Johnson & Johnson Center for Device Innovation, and really learning both from a traditional VC perspective and from like a strategic investor perspective, what all of those investors are kind of looking at, evaluating how they see startups, how they think about them. And so that kind of rounded out my existing kind of entrepreneurship, in the trenches experience to where I am today.
That's so interesting. And I love the idea that like impatience motivated you, because I think that's something that I don't think entrepreneurs talk a little bit about, but like you have to want to build something because it doesn't exist. You're not one to just like sit around and be like, oh, that would be nice if we had that. But no, you're like, I'm going to build this. We don't have this. Someone needs to build this. Someone needs to lead this initiative. So yeah. So tell me a little bit about how else you really tapped into the Houston innovation ecosystem. I know you talked a little bit about THI and Saronis and like how that kind of pulled you into the startup world, but what other, aspects of the Houston innovation ecosystem did you kind of look to help really, I guess, get some experience as a startup leader yourself?
Yeah, and that's like my nice, neat little like revisionist resume kind of career history. And what I would like to say about that is I have had kind of the best mentors through the innovation community that I could possibly have hoped for in Houston, starting with my PI as an undergrad at Rice, kind of encouraging me, Medi, so basically every kind of boss I've had in every role, as well as other kind of ecosystem mentors, have been a huge part of how kind of my career has like ended up moving forward. One of the biggest resources, or one of the most consistent resources, I think, for the last decade has definitely been my relationship with Antanabe. She's a CEO of BioHouston. And she's literally known me since I was like a teenager, at Rice. Through this whole kind of period of kind of growth from student to, now CEO. It's been really great to have somebody that I can go to, when I'm having a bad day, or I had a bad investor call and I just want to vent, but I can also go to them and say, hey, I need these resources, or I need a banker, or I need like a CFO, or, just somebody that can pull all of that together. And she's really been that person for me. I know she does that for a lot of other startups too, but that's definitely been a huge, BioHouston and her role kind of in my career has been a huge part of how it's shaped and ended up kind of moving forward. And then I think the other thing that's been really interesting, just with, fundraising for Saronis was in 2012, and this now fundraising for Prana is now in 2022. So it's literally been a decade. I think the growth that the ecosystem has seen in terms of the support structures that really like all of the infrastructure that exists for entrepreneurs is totally different than it was 10 years ago. So I think it's just a signal of how much the city has put into investing in entrepreneurs, that, there's accelerators, that there's structured mentorship programs, that there's multiple sources of funding that you can go to as opposed to, one or two sources. I think all of that, kind of seeing that 10 years ago and seeing that now and experiencing that difference, has made me kind of really excited about Houston and its ecosystem and where it's going as well.
Yeah. What a decade. I mean, a world apart in so many different ways. So tell me a little bit about like, the motivation to get into the founder seat, to get into that CEO founder position with Prana. What really drove you to make that transition? And then tell me a little bit about Prana.
Yeah, so there's two main things that kind of drove me to that. So one, through my time at J&J, J&J is very focused on lung cancer as a disease state. And I really learned a lot more about kind of its devastating impact. Lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer deaths across genders, across ethnicities. Basically, if you get it, the majority of patients, if you're diagnosed, the majority of patients will die within a year of that diagnosis. And one of the reasons that that happens, and one of the reasons that this disease is so devastating, is we just don't catch it early enough. So unlike, breast, prostate, and other kind of cancers, we historically have not actively screened for lung cancer. So that kind of change has just happened. That paradigm has just happened for lung cancer that's existed across kind of most other major cancers for decades at this point. So screening has only just begun in this kind of world. And because of that, physicians still need kind of the right tools to take some of that early screening information and turn it into early intervention. And so we're kind of at the beginning of what I believe and what I think a lot of kind of industry believes is this kind of wave of us catching lung cancer earlier and earlier. And what do you do with that, right? So that's kind of where Prana comes in. The second reason I jump back into the founder seat. So in the last year and a half, I've twice been basically part of the patient's family. So first, at the end of 2020, my dad had a near fatal heart attack, and just getting over there in the middle of the pandemic, my parents are still in Abu Dhabi, all of that, and trying to get the medical information all over the phone and figure out what was going on. And then, you know, most significantly, just a few months later, I lost my son Lionel to an undiagnosed condition. So we still don't know, you know, over a year later, what exactly happened. And so I was already in medical innovation, but I remember, you know, I spent 5 days in the hospital with Lionel, and I remember like saying goodbye to him and walking away from the hospital and thinking, I cannot imagine going back to any other kind of work. Like, I could not imagine like going back to work and finding meaning in it or finding like a reason to go back to work if I was doing anything else. And so I think those experiences really reinvigorated kind of my dedication to patients and their families. And where I've kind of gotten to with that is basically if I can work my whole life and prevent, you know, just one patient or one family from going through kind of the pain that I did, I would consider my career a success, essentially. So the you know, that all then funneled into how do I take my career and get closer to patients and closer to making that impact? And the way for me to do that, at least, or the most direct way I saw to do that was jumping back into the founder seat.
Yeah, I think it's such a testament to the work that you, but also, you know, people within this industry, you know, have to, you deal with something so personal and then you take it and let it motivate you in your career. Like, I just have so much respect for that. And I think there's a lot of people like you in a similar situation. And I just, it's so horrifying and also so encouraging. So thank you for sharing a little bit about that. Because I just think it's so important. Something, like I said, we don't talk about very much, and it's probably the best motivator. You know, not money or, you know, this is be my million-dollar company, but just the ability to make a difference in patients and their families' lives.
Yeah, and it's been really interesting too, even just since we announced, you know, the launch and CPRIT and all that a few weeks ago. It's been really interesting. Basically, pretty much every day, someone's reached out to me and said, "Oh, I've lost my brother to lung cancer. Or I lost my mom to lung cancer," or just cancer in general, even if it wasn't lung cancer specifically. And I think that for me, at least, that's been, you know, it's horrible that they had to go through those losses, but it has been really encouraging to see already like people feel the impact of somebody, you know, working on something, even if it couldn't help their loved one, but feeling the impact of, well, you know, somebody's working on something to make sure that, you know, we catch this disease earlier and maybe it's not as devastating as it is right now. And I think, yeah, it's an interesting part of the human experience that we all can kind of take our own losses and our own kind of devastation and all of that and channel it into, you know, hope for the future and hope for it being better for somebody we may not even have met yet, you know?
Yeah, I think when I think about cancer, it's like this behemoth that is not really personal because it's so as a whole devastating, and I don't necessarily think about the specific cancers and like how, you know, deathly they are. It's just like, cancer, bad. But when you get to zoom in, like, and with an expert like you, talk a little bit about like the sheer uncharted territory that is lung cancer screening. Like it's kind of eye-opening to see that. I feel like we do need more conversations like this. So yeah, so to kind of go back to something you were talking about with the CPRIT funding. So tell me a little bit about that process. You know, how long have you been working on Prana just like on the side before you've been announcing this? And you're what an announcement to come in with, like, hey, we got $3 million.
Yeah, so J&J basically has been supporting this project within the Center for Device Innovation for actually a few years now. So the original idea came to us, to the Center for Device Innovation, from some thoracic surgeons that are now my co-founders of Prana Thoracic. So Ed Boyle and Rick Fischel, who I'm super excited to work with, you know, for the next several years on this. So they, you know, basically treat lung cancer patients or have in their career and saw this gap, the gap that Prana's feel is filling in how we might be able to better intervene early in lung earlier in lung cancer patients. And they brought kind of that original idea and some of that original IP to the Center for Device Innovation when it was first getting started out in like 2018, 2019. And so for a couple of years, it was worked on there by a great team of engineers. They got it from, yeah, that early idea to something that consistently worked in large animals. And then right before the pandemic is when we decided to kind of think about doing, launching it into its own startup and doing that. And as we were doing that, essentially the pandemic hit. And so we kind of put it on pause just as a lot of startups, you know, early startups kind of experienced wasn't the best environment to necessarily fundraise in March of 2020. But then again, kind of towards the end of last year, it came back around and I decided specifically to go lead this project. There are a couple different people involved, but I decided to go be the founder and be the CEO and lead kind of fundraising and getting the team together around it. So I would say I've specifically been working on it for, you know, 8 or 9 months at this point, since January of 2022. But the technology and, you know, the unmet need and all of that, people have been thinking about that for a long time at this point.
Which kind of raises a question I have, maybe on behalf of someone who's not super familiar with J&J and their presence here in Houston. Obviously, your startup is a unique case coming idea to entrepreneur. But, you know, if somebody is an entrepreneur in Houston, what do they know about getting involved both with J&J and also, like, you know, the Texas Medical Center's innovation presence as well?
Yeah, so I would say I'll start with the narrowest and kind of go broad. So J&J has a couple of different, you know, organizations here to support the local ecosystem. The Center for Device Innovation, where I had my last role, is kind of very focused on things, on medical device startups, early stage medical device startups that are strategically aligned to things that J&J is already doing in their medical device business. So J&J has a large lung cancer component in their medical device business. So that's kind of where Prana, you know, matches up there. And then there's the J-Labs, you know, kind of ecosystem, which exists all across the world. And they historically, I think, have been, or, you know, across kind of their portfolio have been more focused on therapeutics and biotech and pharma. But actually in Houston, it's a decent balance between that and digital health and medical devices. It's a little bit of a different makeup than their overall portfolio. And they do, you know, office space and support, strategic support, and basically help startups kind of in whatever they need. And then also do some of that connecting back to J&J if there's kind of that strategic interest. And then I would say the broadest is kind of TMC Innovation, right? So they exist basically to help any kind of startups that they see as potentially enabling of any of their institution members, you know, the Methodist, the Texas Children's, all of that, those kinds of institutions. If there's a technology that they think those institutions can benefit from, or, you know, build their reputation around, things like that, that's where kind of their interest lies. And so I think, you know, there's several startups that kind of lie at the intersection of all three. And luckily Prana Thoracic is one of those. And so we've gotten to kind of benefit from all three of those entities, and we'll continue to be able to do that moving forward as well.
Yeah, I like how I just made you the official spokesperson for that whole area of Houston innovation and within healthcare. But I mean, if anyone would be, you're among the few that could, I think, has tapped into so much of it. So it's really true. But yeah, like, let's focus back on Prana. Sorry for making you put that hat on. But so with this funding from a separate. Tell me a little bit about what you're going to do with that. You know, what was that grant process like? And what's the next step now that you've received that green light?
Yeah, so we are using that grant plus some of our own funding that we were raising. The way CPRIT, at least the product development awards for CPRIT work is you need to find a 1-2 match. So if you ask for $3 million from CPRIT, you have to have about 1.5 in matching kind of investment dollars. And so we're hoping that all kind of comes together in the next few weeks. And together, that sum should basically be our bolus of funding to get us through first in human studies. So essentially what that means is we're taking our device from something that we know works in, you know, in large animals that we've tested repeatedly there. We're making kind of all of the necessary modifications and doing all of the necessary safety and efficacy testing to make sure that that can then translate into humans. And then we're doing that study, pilot study, essentially in a small group of in a small setting, so 10 to 15 patients, something like that, to kind of prove the concept of our device. So that's what this will fund, as well as build out of the team to do that. Primarily here, that team will primarily be here in Houston.
Well, something that, you know, I was going to ask you about, but I'm going to phrase it a little differently, just based off of how you phrase that. You know, there's so many steps, and rightfully so. But when you are doing a med device, you know, startup, there's so many steps and hoops you have to jump through because it is human lives that we're talking about. Like, it makes perfect sense. But now that you have been on both sides of the table, what do you see as the most challenging part for a Houston healthcare innovator? You know, maybe specifically in med devices, maybe generally in healthcare innovation, because I feel like there are just so many pieces to the puzzle. Is there a piece that's still missing in Houston?
Yeah. So I think one of the most challenging pieces, I think, in Houston or outside of Houston in healthcare is pulling kind of all of those stakeholders together, right? I think if you look at your traditional tech startup, if you can get a product and then a customer and you have product market fit, that's kind of enough. But in healthcare, you have to align you know, the product with the provider and whoever's using it, with the person that's paying for it, which is not always the same, with the patient, and all of those different kind of components have to go together. And so I think that's one of the biggest challenges that the healthcare kind of innovation industry faces in general. And I think where Houston has done really well is supporting kind of the early stage startups, you know, seed stage startups through Series A-ish kind of startups, in taking their ideas from that, from an idea to something that's demonstrated either, in pilot launches or in, you know, first in human studies or phase 1, phase 2 studies. And I think the interesting thing now for Houston that we have this critical mass of companies that have reached kind of this, you know, still quite early stage, but not kind of at that really idea early seed stage phase, we'll be seeing how the ecosystem now grows to support those companies growing further and getting them kind of across kind of the valley of death, so, you know, so to speak, to ultimately to exit. Because exit means adoption and exit means like those technologies are ultimately actually put to use at the bedside.
Absolutely. I think that's such a good reminder to think it through that long term, because it's just such a different journey than, like, let's say a startup that has software technology for like a B2B setting. And it's like, no shame to them, but that is a much shorter journey and sometimes fast, much more, you know, fast moving. So it's always nice to kind of remember how much more goes into getting a med device into the hands of the people who are performing those procedures, right? So when you think about Prana, what is the next big step? I know you talked through a little bit how the funding is going, you know, what's kind of on the horizon for you? What's that thing that keeps you up at night thinking about growing this company?
Yeah. So I think the next big step is, like I said, closing on kind of the matching funds and just then being able to truly launch, to get kind of a team together and get to work. But yeah, I think one of the things that keeps me up, I guess, is recruiting kind of the right talent for that team. So not only I hope, you know, what we can build is not only something that attracts really talented engineers and executives and entrepreneurs, but also people that want to do mission-driven work, because I think that's really important to me as kind of the CEO of Prana Thoracic, is that mindset of driving this towards a patient and ultimately that patient impact being the thing that pushes us forward. And I know, you know, it's kind of what everybody says, right? But I am already kind of starting to think about how do we actually incorporate that into our day-to-day, into like our work culture, into how we treat each other even as individuals, as opposed to just like coworkers and stuff like that. So I'm really excited and really nervous about bringing that team together and how to do that well.
And I want to go back to something I think we have in common, our favorite topic of talking about Houston, the innovation ecosystem. So again, you know, with you wearing all these different hats from student to now CEO, what has been the biggest game changers for Houston's innovation ecosystem? What was that big win that has helped to propel the city to really develop its innovation ecosystem as a whole, and also specifically healthcare innovation?
Yeah, so I think there's several things that have happened, and I think all of them kind of come back to the healthcare institutions in Houston, whether that's TMC or Rice or Methodist or whoever, really starting to invest in innovation, not only because it's kind of feel good and you know, is trendy to like invest in entrepreneurship and innovation, but because I think it's starting to affect, you know, everyone's bottom line, because I think it's starting to become, for example, a requirement to have something around that to recruit talent here, right? To recruit that really amazing physician or surgeon or professor that happens to have, you know, access to that kind of innovation, a more mature innovation ecosystem. How do you attract them to Houston is to kind of build that here. So I think I've seen in the last decade, especially, a lot of the institutions start to kind of really, you know, put their money where their mouths are, basically, and start to invest in the infrastructure within kind of each of the institutions. And then the other thing is really interesting is just starting to see more and more collaboration where there used to be competition, I think, in the Med Center, specifically, I think, when it comes to research and innovation. So I think those two are big things that have kind of progressed a lot over the last decade, and I think are propelling Houston forward.
Yeah. I love to talk about the, like, where we're at on the journey, right? Like as an ecosystem. I think every so often I get a press release. It's like Houston's the number one for life science, early stage life science ecosystem. And then it's like Houston misses the top 10. Like there's just so much. It's like every other day, it seems like there's someone saying we're far behind, someone saying we have all the ingredients, it's here already, kind of thing. I just wonder what you think, where we lie in that. Have we made it? Are we still making it? Are we just so far behind we can't even say we're in the process?
I think we've made it and we're making it. You know, I'm a Houston evangelist, so I've been here for 15 years. I constantly try to convince people to move here and come build their startups here. So maybe you're asking the wrong person for like an unbiased perspective. But my, you know, admittedly biased perspective is that Houston has this unique opportunity, or if you are an entrepreneur coming to Houston, you have this unique opportunity where it's not so, you know, it's not so saturated as an innovation market that you're going to kind of get lost in the fray or lost in the noise of some of the more that might occur, you know, in some of the more mature ecosystems. But there's also enough of that base kind of infrastructure that you're not going to be having to build, you know, everything from scratch or struggle really hard to find the right networks and the right groups to kind of support you. I think the cool thing about, if you come to Houston as an entrepreneur right now, not only do you get to be part of building your startup, but you also get to be part of building kind of the ecosystem and shaping that as well. Which you can't say about, you know, if you're a young entrepreneur moving to a different city that has a more mature ecosystem at this point, that's, you know, no longer possible. So I think that's where Houston's kind of in a really interesting spot, where entrepreneurs are given the opportunity, have support, but also given the opportunity to kind of shape what Houston looks like in the next few years.
Yeah, I like how you admitted to being like a Houston evangelist. I get that you're quote unquote biased, but the fact that you were, you know, aren't originally from here and have like just fell in love with Houston, I think that's a really good sign. So as you think you're biased, I think you're well immersed and informed to make that decision. So, but maybe I'm biased because I'm a native. But yeah. Well, this was so fun catching up. Like I said at the beginning of this, it was long overdue, and we probably have so much more we could discuss, but we'll call it at this because otherwise this might be a much longer episode. So thank you so much for joining me again, Joanna. This was a pleasure, and I'm so excited to see kind of what's next with Prana and everything else you have going on.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Don't forget to hit subscribe so you don't miss next week's edition, and check out innovationmap.com for the latest Houston startup and innovation news.